39 hours, or if you prefer, 2,340 minutes. That's how long it's been since the vernal equinox this past Friday, that wonderful day every year when winter finally teeters over the edge into spring. Now, technically, day and night were equally long here in Maryland on the 18th, but equinox is still usually regarded as the day when night and day are perfectly balanced, signaling the long, long-awaited end of the cold months. Not, however, that you can tell from Friday's weather that I believe caused some cancellations even here in your own community. Because spring is finally here, despite weather trying to trick us into believing otherwise, I've been meditating a bit of late upon balance. Not necessarily the balance of daylight and moonlight, or warmth and cold, or even of values like justice and mercy or freedom and responsibility. No, I'm thinking about the kind of balance that our bodies need in order to walk, or to wave, or to dance, or even to chew. In order for the human body to move in any way, our muscles must contract and relax in just the right balance. Too much relaxation and we simply crumple to the floor bonelessly. Too much contraction and again we topple, this time with a painful full body spasm. But with just the right balance of relaxation and contraction in our muscles, our bodies are capable of immense beauty. We fly into a flurry of all kinds of movement, sign language and tai chi, mudras and bowing, smiles and embraces and breakdancing and kissing. All of these are possible when contraction and relaxation are held in balance. When they are allowed to coexist simultaneously, neither ultimately overwhelming the other. The human body is capable of both, and when the tension is held between the two, allowing them to coexist without one or the other dominating in the body, we breathe, our hearts beat, we have facial expressions and gestures, and we can move. So in a way, a great deal of our lives are lived the way that we live them because of these two very simple things held in balance, making so very, very much more possible. So yes, now that the spring equinox has arrived, I've been thinking about this, about balance and how it's really all about holding the tension between two vitally necessary opposites in order to create space in which we can live our lives fully. Now, there are many opposites in our lives, and some peacefully coexist within us, easily reconciled, while others can seem mutually exclusive or paradoxical, and so can be quite troubling. We frequently want to take a stand on one side or the other of things like, say, justice or mercy, maybe out of a sense of conviction, or perhaps just because ambiguity is uncomfortable. And yet, in order to live our lives fully, we can't simply collapse the tension in favor of one or the other. We must instead hold and navigate the tension created in our lives by these opposites. Now, I'm sure you can think of some of these opposing ideas and values. Heart and head, dependence and independence, competition and cooperation. Our lives are full of both sides of these binaries, and living mature lives means learning to not only navigate between opposite poles, to not only tolerate the tension between opposites, but to revel in that tension, and to allow that tension to pull us creatively toward a deeper understanding of truth and meaning. Truth and meaning. I know that this is a familiar phrase to us. Our Unitarian Universalist fourth principle affirms and promotes a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And among our seven principles, this is the one that most frequently gets you use in trouble as a faith community. Part of the reason for that is probably because we don't always strike the best balance between two of the central values in this principle, freedom and responsibility. Let me tell you a quick story. A few years ago, I was serving as a chaplain intern at Banner Good Samaritan Medical Center in Phoenix, Arizona. During our class sessions, one thing we got to do was to talk among ourselves not only about our experiences working there in the hospital and as spiritual care providers, but also about how our own religious traditions impact us as chaplains. One of my classmates, a gentle and devout Christian, was baffled by Unitarian Universalism. What a strange religion. He wanted to know what UUs believe about a variety of religious matters, about Jesus and God, about the soul, about the afterlife, about the necessity of salvation, and so on. He was fascinated. I explained that different UUs have different beliefs about each of these things that he had mentioned, although there were some commonalities. And I explained that Unitarian Universalism is a creedless faith that tends to leave such questions to the individual believers to decide for themselves in a community that values free inquiry. And I said that's actually why many people come through our doors, why they are drawn to us. They love being in a faith community where they are free to believe whatever they want. So he simply stared at me in confusion and asked, not at all in an impolite or challenging way, "Well, what do you all believe other than in freedom of belief?" It's a good question, and he's not the first to have asked. And it's also the butt of many jokes. Lenny Bruce once joked, "I know my humor is outrageous when it makes the Unitarians so mad they burn a question mark on the front of my lawn." And I'll admit that there was a time not too terribly long ago when people would ask me, "What is Unitarian Universalism? What do Unitarian Universalists believe?" And I would respond, "Oh, well, we believe in the Unitar." And when they would then inevitably take the bait and ask me, "Well, what the heck is a Unitar?" I would then tell them, "Anything you want it to be." Now, that joke eventually grew a bit old. They all do. I mean, for all that it makes good fodder for many a joke and can provoke confusion about what exactly it is that UU stand for, the fourth principle's affirmation of the free and responsible search for truth and meaning does have a long and noble history. In 1568, John Sigismund, the Unitarian king of Hungary, issued what is known as the Edict of Torda, declaring that in every place the preachers shall preach and explain the gospel, each according to his understanding of it, and if the congregation like it, well. If not, no one shall compel them, for their souls would not be satisfied, but they shall be permitted to keep a preacher whose teaching they approve. This edict was also known as the Patent of Toleration. It affirmed the right not only of individual preachers to seek and share truth as they saw it, but also the right of individual believers to do the same and to freely worship wherever their conscience dictated. The Hungarian Unitarians were inspired in part by the Christian scriptures. For example, in the book of John, chapter 3, verse 8, you'll find some version of the words that we heard in the James Luther Adams reading earlier. "The wind bloweth where it listeth, and thou hearest the sound thereof, but canst not tell where it cometh and whither it goeth. So it is every one that is born of the Spirit." And that's a lot of fancy language to basically say that truly religious people are inherently free and must be free to answer the call of the Spirit wherever it may lead. Whether religious truth is a matter of reason, or intuition, or conscience, a person must have the freedom to pursue it. Truth may, as Kenneth Collier's poem we heard earlier affirms, be found anywhere, solid, unmistakable, sparkling in the sunlight, hidden in the flowers, dancing in the sun, darting behind a curtain, hidden as the sky. And we must be free to follow it. Unitarian Universalist Puritan ancestors drew inspiration from John chapter 3, verse 8, and other Bible passages, and used them to affirm their own version of religious freedom. While their notion of religious freedom tended to be limited only to other Puritans, it was still very important for its time. For the Puritans, that passage meant that churches should be formed not on the basis of a shared creed or set of beliefs, but a shared covenant or set of promises. To give you an example of what I mean, listen to this 1656 Puritan covenant. The congregants pledged to walk together with God in gospel faith and order as a particular church in the performance of all duties toward God, toward each other, and toward all men in the strength of the Spirit of Christ and according to his word. Now, this covenant, although not something that you would see most likely in very many Unitarian Universalist churches today, was not a statement of belief that could be used as a creedal test for membership. And that's super important. The covenant was not used as a means for deciding whether a person believed the right thing or of deciding whether the person could be kicked out of the faith community for not believing the right thing. Instead, the covenant described the way in which people freely gathering together in a church wished to be with one another. And it described some of the ways in which they intended to use their freedom as a gathered community, to perform the religious duties they believed they possessed. Now, for all that I'm not particularly inspired by very many of the things that the Puritans did, there is still something to be said for the way that they approached their free and responsible search for truth and meaning. They really emphasized the responsible part. They did not merely have freedom from something, such as freedom from religious oppression, nor simply the freedom to do something, such as gather together to do whatever they wished. Instead, they used their freedom for something, putting it into service to something greater than themselves. In their particular case, they chose to use their religious freedom to create a church into which they could fulfill the responsibilities they came to believe they possessed as a religious people. They perceived themselves as possessing duties toward not only God, but also toward each other and to all people. And they were responsible in their use of freedom in that they not only acknowledged their duties, but freely chose to respond to the duties they believed they possessed. The late Unitarian Universalist theologian James Luther Adams, whose words we heard earlier today, had a similar understanding of freedom in religious communities. He was all about the free church, but had a particular understanding of what it was and what it did. To be a free community is to be a responsible community, a community that freely chooses to respond appropriately as life demands. What does it choose to respond to? To the context in which freedom is exercised? To the community-forming, sustaining, judging, transforming opportunities in our lives? The free church also responds to the harmful principalities and powers of the world, whether churchly or secular, that hold us in bondage. And how, in James Luther Adams' understanding, are we to respond to these things? By liberating from oppression and exploitation, by promoting freedom in fellowship, and seeking unity in diversity. And by earning and creating a tradition binding together past, present, and future into a living tether in a continuing covenant and identity, bringing forth treasures, both new and old. Responsibility, then, is often closely linked to conviction and to loyalty. Engaging in a free and responsible search for truth and meaning also means remaining true to the truth that we have already found. And it means being responsive to the demands placed upon us by that truth. In our children's story today, the rabbi from Lvov sought and found his treasure. But he did not merely keep it to himself. Instead, he used what he had found to better his community and the world. And why? Because he believed that that was what he was called to do, and he chose to be true to his calling. And that's what we are called to do. We are called to act on the truth that we find, to show loyalty and conviction, and not simply to allow our search for truth and meaning to be an intellectual quest. Truth demands action, commitment, trust, fidelity. It is free, but it is also something that grabs you and won't easily let you go. In his book, Man's Search for Meaning, the psychiatrist and neurologist Viktor Frankl, a Holocaust survivor, wrote, "Ultimately, man should not ask what the meaning of his life is, but rather must recognize that it is he who is asked. In a word, each man is questioned by life, and he can only answer to life by answering in his own life. To life, he can only respond by being responsible." Earlier in this service, we heard the song Blessing. I really like one of the lines from the song. "Northern earth be yours to stand on, ground so you know what's real." We're not born into an empty void. There is ground beneath our feet, and we have been part of this earth from the day that we are born. Born into a time upon this earth, born into a place on this earth, and into a community on this earth. Born into a context that not only grounds, shapes, and limits our freedom, but which demands things of us. The ways that we respond to those demands, to those invitations, and to those needs in the world matter. Our world is an interdependent world where my well-being and your well-being and the well-being of all beings are intertwined. My actions impact others directly or indirectly. And because my beliefs shape my beliefs matter. The search for truth and meaning matters. The truths we find and that we hold on to and that we respond to matter. They are not private matters, personal truths, or just my opinion. Our truths are powerful and public because, whether ultimately real or false, they nevertheless shape our lives in our interdependent world. May you find the truths that ground, heal, inspire, and challenge you to grow as you each live your separate and interconnected lives. May you exercise freedom responsibly, responding to life's love, life's blessings, challenging and demanding life. Respond with gratitude, courage, and conviction. May you find the balance and hold the tension between freedom and responsibility in your own life. And in that space and in that struggle, may you discover the rich meaning that makes life a celebration, a triumph, and a work of love and beauty. In the words of the song Blessing that we heard earlier, "All of these I wish upon you, multiply them 3 times 3. Draw a circle all around you and forever blessed be. Happy equinox and forever blessed be."